it's now recording, but it's too early to start recording, so I'm going to put it on pause. I'm actually going to put it there because I think it's on the
And we'll make sure that the test man is also aware of how many days do they sit in committees and parliament, so that appropriate tax deductions can take place. SG and the chair of the council, your team, once again, you are welcome. We am aware that today you came in to make a presentation on annual report. And as I was saying to you offline, that a few days to come will be tabling, the minister will be tabling the medium-term budget policy statement. Your results, census outcome is not yet known. And I'm certain it's going to impact on our budgeting processes moving forward. But that's one of the issues that I'm sure at your level and the National Department of Treasury and Government as a whole, you have found a way to manage that part. But of course, medium-term budget policy statement is an indication of what would be the planning process for the next financial year at MTEF period, meaning that we still have time to trigger around if the information so suggests that there's a need for the allocation of resources to be informed in a different way. But we're not here for that today. It's just anxiety on my part. And I think many of my colleagues and many of public representatives and policymakers are eagerly awaiting the outcome of the results, of which we know that the work done so far, the precision with which you executed your plan and the exercise as a whole, gives us confidence that whatever is going to be the outcome is something that the whole South African will embrace. You are heartily welcome with your team. I'm told the technology has decided to reject us for now in terms of the presentations. I'm not sure. Is it working now? Not yet. They're working on it. But I thought we should, if we can, maybe use the manual presentation for now, whilst they're still working on it. Once it is done, then we'll revert back to the technical or the most advanced way of making presentations. I'm not sure if you are ready for this kind of inconvenience. Honorable members, I also received the sad news that the committee secretary, Ellen, has lost his uncle this morning.
Wow.
I thought was not going to pitch, but because it's a dedicated, it's one of those few civil servants that still hangs around in life. I would want to excuse him so that he can go and attend to family matters. We are sorry about that. Very, very much sorry. But you have our support. I think you should excuse yourself. And don't rush yourself. Go and do what you're supposed to do. Thank you. Over to you, S.C.
And the honorable members, thank you very much for giving us the time and allowing the state exactly on this day last year. That's when the census of 2011 was launched, the 10th of.
Can you ask this SP to sit down so that you...
The 10th of October, 2011. It was exactly this day when we launched the census. I suppose it's no coincidence of numbers that today we have to give a report and account on what the SSA did with the public funds as well as in terms of the mandates that were granted to us. The outline of the presentation follows as those statistics matter. And we ask this question because in another 20 days we'll be releasing census 2011. But more importantly, do they matter in our public life? Do they matter in the making of decisions? At the end of the presentation, I think we should try and answer that question. And on the basis of the organizational performance, which we will marshal as the evidence to demonstrate or not demonstrate whether statistics matter. And then, of course, the financial performance. Those are the three items that we want to talk to. On the question of whether statistics matter, the answer probably is yes, it matters to inform planning, it matters to monitor progress, it matters in terms of evaluating performance, it matters in the support of planning systems in crafting the roadmap to achieve long-term goals. What then is the story of the census? The story of the census is on slide 4. In it, we talk to preparation, we talk to getting ready, we talk about the 60 days. The 60 days of deployment of census, the reverse logistics, the processes of analysis, and of course, I put to you that on the 30th of October, the results will then be available. In preparing for the census, the main preparation started around April to March, April to 2011. That was the time when we were in very intense preparation, advertising, dealing with boundaries, dealing with creating satellite offices, introducing IT infrastructure, and then, of course, developing the systems and finalizing them. From April to August, we prepared and started looking at recruitment, advertising and recruiting staff, looking at forward logistics to provinces, to district offices, and then, of course, the campaign for participating, that you count. Then there was the intensive 60 days. Just towards the end of September and up to end of October. That was the intensive 60 days. In that 60 days, he spent something about 1.6 billion rand. Can you imagine when you spend 1.6 billion rand in 60 days? I can't imagine it. It's a pipe that got filled with everything else, enumerators, payments, everything. In that 60 days, we had to recruit, train, select, and appoint field workers, 157,000 of them. 1.2 million tons of materials had to be ferried to the district. 1,200 containers, each containing taking about a ton, 1,000 kilograms, had to be deployed to field. And we had to deploy people in 103,000 enumeration areas. The political campaign of the census with posters of the enumerators that you could see in all areas of the country. 3 million of them. Each enumerator had about 20 posters of their own faces posted throughout the country so that you would know who is coming, so that you would open your doors to them. And we visited 14.6 million dwellings, knocked at their doors, and pasted a sticker if we went there. If we didn't find anybody, we'll say, this person was not found, and we'll go 3 times to try and find them. If we couldn't find them, we'll say, unfortunately, we haven't found them. 7,400 vehicles that were branded in yellow census were all over the streets, running up and down at night, during the day, all the time, we were busy. And then, of course, we are monitoring daily what progress was being made. That was followed
by a process, a period of about 4 months when we are working on reverse logistics. Questionnaires were going to the processing center, which you honorable members visited. We had to pay and decommission field workers. We had to run a post-enumeration survey. And then we had to start processing. Processing of the data was confined at the processing center where we had 2,200 people. The chair, I've now stood up. I can't sit down, chair. I lose momentum if I sit down. And chair, and honorable members, on the 30th of October, we will be presenting to you the South Africa I know, the home I understand. That's what we will be presenting on the 30th of October to yourself. What are the challenges that are associated with Census 2011? I painted a very rosy picture of how we went out there. But there are challenges. 157,000 is about 11% of the public service. Imagine an organization called FedSA confined in Pretoria and 9 provincial offices mobilizing 10% of the public service within 60 days. Even if you were to spike your personnel by 10% across departments, that chokes the system. 10% of the public service were managed, mobilized by FedSA, having only 4,000 people. And among those 4,000, there are about 500 or so who are handling personnel, HR, finance, and the like. This is a mammoth challenge, and that was recruiting, training, deploying, and management. System, monitoring and tracking people out in field becomes very difficult. They are going into 103,000 enumeration areas. Once they've disappeared there, they fill in the form, they come back. All kinds of circumstances confront us, and our systems not always are ready for this. In fact, the entire thing shocks the nation. That is why it's called the census is the greatest mobilization in times of peace. Supply chain management, the uneven development of South Africa. In Bochum, my darling, we had to provide catering. And the people that cater there don't have a tax clearance or any of this stuff that we have in mm-hmm. urban area. You have to improvise so that the people, the trainees, eat. The 157,000 people, wherever they are, where they get trained, they eat. So the supply chain management environment was challenged by this uneven environment that you operated in. What about paying in 30 days? Our invoices grew by a factor of 10. And a narrow pipe at CETA couldn't handle this traffic. 30 days, whatever we tried to do was impossible. But we did what we could because payments still went. Enumerators. You know, we know that we have cell phone technology and the like. And of course, enumerators are just people who have just completed matric or are unemployed. My God, we imagine that when they are used to a cell phone, they also know banking. No, they don't. The ATM is foreign to them because nobody sends them money through that medium because there's nobody who can send them that money. Our assumptions about technology adoption were absolutely misplaced. However, payment of enumerators was the best thing after ice cream. We paid up to 95% of all enumerators on day one. Previously, it would have been a headache. Up to Christmas, we'd have had strikes and everything. But 95% were paid. They were able to access, but the 5% dealing with that tail has been the most difficult. Even today, we still get people saying, I was not paid. Because people have never used ATM. They try several times, the card gets swallowed. And it's gone. And they've never used ATM in their life. Our assumptions were somewhat misplaced in terms of the technological divide has just revealed something to us that we should have been aware of much longer. But despite that, I must say that payment through the banking system, through the ATM, was the best thing that we could. I mean, these kids are even beaten by the pensioners. The pensioners know how to operate the ATM because they receive money. They haven't received money, so they are not acquainted with the banking system. Vehicle management. The damages were gigantic. Absolutely gigantic. Because you get people, you test them, you say, well, they know how to drive, but... And you can't insure. Taking it misused. At times, you don't know whether the car is being misused or the person is on the... But we knew that people had to work right around the clock. We had tracking devices, and when they overspend, you call them and said, hey, slow down, don't kill yourself. Logistics, printing and forward logistics, collections in highly mobile society, it's a challenge. Because if you get there, they say, I'm not here. You go there, I'm not here. Even if people are willing, that's the spatial system that we have in South Africa make undertaking this a very, very challenging task. What are the general challenges in the organization? I've talked about the challenges of the census, but let me go to the ones in the organization. We operate within international environment, in the statistical environment. One of those challenges is implementing the international standards. For instance, systems of national account 2008, the international standard industrial classification version 4, all those things are the challenges that we have to tackle. And the OECD, as members of OECD and members of BRICS, we have to comply to this standard so that we can trade. The other challenge is subnational statistics are important. It's fine to run a statistics office that looks at the macro and the market economy. It's another thing when you have to look at structure. And some of the challenges that are nailed down by the national plan are around structure. What is the structure of the economy? And structure of the economy relates to the subnational, to the firm level, rather than to your general macro models. And we have to adapt to those kinds of standards in order to inform at those levels. People say, oh, these guys are asking us too many questions. They are here again and again and again with this questionnaire. No, I'm tired, go home. Of course, the Act compels, and we can use the Act. But I think we like people to cooperate. So promoting the knowledge, use, and understanding of statistics is very, very important so that people understand that it is a national duty to work on the statistics. Fatiguing, yes, it might be, but it's important to participate. And of course, we are handling the business with registration form in collaboration with the CPIC, and we have actually been discussing with the commissioner on employment statistics. Once they expanded and opened up the registration to everybody, we can see correspondence in the numbers. That's a very important thing too. And then, of course, the aging ITC environment that we have to tackle that. Human resources for the broad national statistics system. A system for one and not for the other is not a system. It's a broken one. We need a system for all. And then, of course, we need analytical and methodological capacity for everyone. And the science has to be internalized across internalization of the national statistics system across all government departments. What are the achievements in relation to all other areas? All relevant and social economic statistics and social statistics have been released and consistent with the International Monetary Fund special dissemination standards. We have had a new release on the victims of crime earlier. And then, of course, the new series on social indicators based on the living conditions survey. The plan to meet the dwelling frame in collaboration with others is on track, and this will be less expensive as we use partners in this, particularly the municipalities. And then, of course, we've got an infrastructure of statistical offices across the country, and we believe that the census will drive this forward. We ran this challenging task of the census while everything ran in the organization and nothing got broken. This was an exciting year. when we run a census, all other things stop. This time around, all everything else ran as well as the census. And of course, you will know that the chairperson of the African Union Commission, her last task as the Minister of Home Affairs, was jointly with Minister Manuel to say, on the continent, now that South Africa, you have led in ensuring that Africa counts in the 2010 round of censuses, that the entire continent, except Somalia, will run a census, including Angola, next year. They are running their pilot now, and we are talking and discussing with them on this matter. Namibia is also releasing their data. We are well established and connected on the continent, and we provide support in this area. Now that Africa counts through the Africa Symposium for Statistical Development, we are changing gear and looking at civil registration. And the last task that the Minister of Home Affairs, now the chairperson of the African Union, was to launch and accept and allow us to run around the civil registration and vital statistics for the next 5 years. What has been our performance? Of course, we look at economic growth, prices, sustainable resource management, employment, job creation, and decent work. On those, we have published our quarterly GDP estimates regularly, 149 monthly releases, published monthly CPI and PPI, compiled discussion documents on the environment, sustainable resource management. Quarterly employment and earning statistics have been published quarterly as well. And, of course, the QLFS, the Labor Force Survey. And then we have an improved collaboration with SARS. As they opened up the registration, we see that collaboration growing. What about social statistics, the life circumstances, population dynamics, safety and security, health, education, rural development, food security and land reform? What have we done? Our regular GHS, publishing every year, but also adding a module that explains what South Africa is about as we bring to you the South Africa we know, the home we understand. Fieldwork for 2011 census was completed. Of course, as we've talked about processing. Vital statistics have been published, monthly and media population estimates, and Chair, you have touched on that one. Victims of crime, which received quite a lot of public traction and discussion around how people experience crime, and we have established partnership with the police so that the statistics, even if they differ, the differences can be explained and understood. And then we, of course, have a technical team on crime statistics. Well, on the health issue, causes of death, what kills South Africans? That's an annual report that we publish on how it kills South Africans. And then, of course, through the DHS, one module that we worked on was information on education and, of course, information on food security in relation to human resources. We have our interns and we absorb them. 167 have been absorbed thus far, as year in, year out, we get interns. We want to move towards an area where we become an employer of choice. The market competes at times on money. We want to compete on career. That will provide you a career. We may not pay you the fancy money as you are an intern, but we'll focus on career. And it is an area that we want to look at, as Tete said, and say, when you have worked in this organization, you will have a career in the organization and a career outside. I was coming with one guy this morning, was driving, he's working in the office, he says, you know, when we sit in interviews, Tete say provides us, when they see, they ask, where have you worked? They say, he's worked for Tete say. And he says, we train in all aspects. Even if you don't have a degree, the opportunities that the organization provides to you to understand all aspects of statistics is incredible. And I listened to that. I said, this sounds like music to the ear. But we want to focus on career. Because at times, we pay a little bit more to attract the graduates. But we want to behave like Microsoft. It doesn't pay people that much who come. It provides career. and I think we should be able to provide career. What about organizational performance? We successfully concluded the census and processing resumed. If we are reporting on the last year, but I can report that now we have finished the processing as I talk. Well, we continue to provide the core statistical products. We have a national footprint across the country. We continue to build statistical capacity. We improve our systems. We lead in the harmonization of statistical development of the continent. The Auditor General has always, in the last 6 years, provided an improving opinion about how we govern. But however, this was an unusual year. We got a qualified audit. It is regrettable. It is painful. But I think it's an outlier in the performance of TTSA. So TTSA in this year received a qualified audit. The elements of the qualified audit is around the accruals. Disclosure, we'll say more about this. And the qualification was around the inadequate systems in place to track records of accounts payable for goods and services received but not yet paid for. And here I have to say that one of the things that the qualified audit discloses is about the adequacy of the government system, government-wide systems, the agency environment. What do you do in the agency environment? Everything is not under your control. You depend on others. And the census, as I said, 10% of the public service employed by one department at one go. Through seismic movements across the entire government. And it shows in this kind of thing. That is why an organization that has received unqualified audits for 6 years, I'm not justifying why we got a qualified audit, but I'm saying it may come as not a surprise that in the year when you have this seismic movement, that the qualified audit may revisit you. In fact, then we need to take steps to ensure that this seismic movement do not yield undesirable outcomes in terms of government. What are we doing? We are enhancing our oversight functions. We have started implementing corporate governance framework, including risk management. In fact, when we met with the Accountant General, he was saying, this particular issue requires to be brought. We have met with our audit committee and said, there are seismic movements that impact across government and display and show the weaknesses in government system, in system-wide government processes and systems. And that's an issue that we have to put on the table in order to address it, because it's very, very important. Challenges are system functionalities and integration, overall human resources in provinces, and of course, we talked about funding the strategy. We presented here about funding the strategy. Now, what are the expenditure patterns? You'll see that as far as expenditure is concerned, we are close at 98.5, spending every cent that we had and spending it as prudently as we could. We also see that there were shifts that were variants and significant variants across programs in the year past. We also see that survey operations took the lion's share, 2.3 billion, and survey operations, that's where the census functions. We are a 1.7 billion organization. And in the year of the census, this shot up to 3.7 billion. So there was a torrent that ran through the same pipe. At times, some things have to give when there's that kind of pressure. But they gave, but not drastically. This is how the spike can be represented in the year of the census. This is expenditure 208, 209, starting. But on the year of the, in the year of the census, the spike just shot through the roof. It meant sleepless nights for all of us, a lot of things that had to happen. And that's how we had to absorb that spike. What are the forthcoming events? economic statistics, reweighted and rebased CPI. Next year, we are actually releasing the weight by the end of, on the 6th of November. We are also releasing the income and expenditure survey report, which is a report that tells about patterns and changes in the patterns of income and expenditure about South Africans. We have a re-engineered PPI release next year. And then, of course, the MDG report for 2012-2013. Now, the census. The South Africa I know, the home I understand. Release date, as we said, the 30th of October. Census 96, 24 months after the census was run. Census 21 months, this one within 12 months. That's an achievement. In 12 months, we are releasing the results. Absolutely unheard of in South Africa. In fact, unheard of in many parts of the world, where all the data that is available is released all at the same time. No preliminary. 12 months from the date when we ran the census, it meant that we ran round the clock. What are the products? They are easy to use. You will see them. They are easy to use. You can use them blind. They are accessible. The electronic print media is available, mobile devices based. On a cell phone, you'll get the result. They show you the geography. Both of my darling will be on the map as well. And because they're accessible, they empower citizens. They're going to enhance the use of evidence in decisions. They will function in local government. They'll be the rallying point for citizens to discuss and debate. They'll be the discussion point for children around the environment from where they come and the school they stay, they work in. This is what the national plan asks. How do we discuss? How do peers in school, how does leadership, I mean, the census results and in the way they are packaged and delivered enhances this discourse that the national plan so fits. And it is in that evidence that we can discuss more rationally in South Africa about everything else. And the communities can engage about themselves as active communities, and they promote a good citizenry and enable citizens to make choices. When we have done all that, we have improved and moved towards trust in statistics, by broadening the role and reach of official statistics, by coordinating and working jointly, by enhancing the quality, sustaining the capacity, and we can agree that we have done more with the same. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, SG. It's a pity your audience is very limited. Otherwise, we would have had a serious clapping of a round of applause. this is a very, very illuminating presentation. Once again, it is always very refreshing to listen to how statistics does its work. In fact, as you speak, I say generally people, if you ask even members of parliament, what is that it says about census? That's all. That's a whole range of information that underpins planning. Everything that we do, without the use of this information, in fact, not be able to address the challenges that, South Africa faces. But I will leave it to honorable members to interact with the presentation. Comrade and Honorable Nyambo Mthethwa, you will be followed by Madlamini, Honorable Luyenge, Honorable Ross, and Honorable Chabalala, in that order.
No, thanks, Chair. At least it is sitting down now. You won't be getting momentum anymore. If we were to ask a simple question and say, now that we have run surely this is a successful campaign that we have embarked on. If you were to ask, what is it that you think may improve this current result? What is it? What are the two key issues that you think can be improved in order that we can keep the bar even more higher than this? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I need to take this opportunity to actually congratulate the SG and the team. It's unfortunate that the Auditor General does not weigh the commitment. He always look at the numbers and the receipts, the checks and balances. But I'm sure us as the committee, knowing what you've gone through, we really appreciate it. Having said that, Honorable Chair, I'm just requesting the SG, maybe during this time, while we are waiting for another census period, they come up with the proposal for the payments, especially for the terms. Because the terms, they come from the rural areas, they come from the very remote areas, and they are employed in that. And as a result, they don't even know how the bank facilities or products are working. So now, can they then maybe identify a better model or a method to use to pay out, and so that we assist, because we can assist by negotiating with the minister so that he discusses the issues with the banks as to what is the best method. But I think it's the department that needs to come with that and say, this is what you are proposing, next time this is how we can handle the payments. Because, you know, I know the VIP as the payroll system can actually lead to that qualified report. Because some, there might be errors during the payment. So if you can just come up with another method and another model, and if you present to the committee, then the committee can take it further and see, Chair. That's what I'm proposing. That's the first thing. And secondly, I think, Chair, much as the department has got the qualified report, but, you know, if you are working under the unconducive environment, like the building of the status, say, It can actually work on your mind, because you also need oxygen, you need space, you need movement. So I also suggest that this issue of the building infrastructure of the status, they needs to be taken seriously. We've been hearing about it now for about 2 or 3 years, the space but we don't see the movement. If we can have that. Now, having said that, the SG told us about the state infrastructure nationally that they're operating. Now I'm asking myself, if you look at the qualified report, as to those, how much, now that's my question, how much SG of those national state infrastructure contributed towards the advance payment? Because if somebody is to be told to execute a particular task that is not within his role or their role, there's the office, they are going to say, but give us the money to put the door, give us the money to put up the system, give us the money to do this. Now the question is, how much of that, or did you experience that? If so, how much of that did take place? Because it might happen that it did actually contribute to the unqualified report, and the material losses when the materials were delivered to these national offices or national infrastructures, what was the monitoring? What was the monitoring mechanism that was in place? As to did they pay if 50 million were taken from point one to point two, did point two receive as they are? Who were monitoring those? Were they well trained to do that to do that job? And like to say, I'm not gonna be long. The service providers from the, I don't think, Chair, looking at our modalities of our province, of our country, we can still solve that problem of having the first and the third world within South Africa. We're still going to have Aboma Dlamini that are pay cooking umkhodi, Komokeng, to provide the food for the people. And as a result, I think what we need to just to is just to, because it's just to have the receipts, even the receipts that you pass from the CNA. So what is needed there, we need to train them. Those service providers, when they are appointed, they must not be appointed 3 days before. They need to be appointed, given enough time, and a training needs to be taken, because that is part of the development. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Without repeating, Chairperson, the ululating views about what we have had and what we have been told by the ST about State South Africa. Let me just say, Chair, what the ST is doing and his officials is actually what the public administration as a doctrine requires from the civil servants in execution of their duties. They must be seen to be passionate of what they are doing, even before knowing as to how to do, but the passion alone, it counts a lot. What Lamine is saying, the audit opinion is about figures. It's about receipts that are not seen or explanation which is not enough. And our main concern is the outcome of that. You know, we don't really worry much about receipts that are not seen or seen. You can get a clean audit, but if the impact of the expenditure incurred, it doesn't say anything. We must see the difference from the beneficiaries. So you need not worry much, as long as you are still passionate and able to deliver. Chair, if I can ask you just two questions. One, despite of the uneven environment that officials have been operating in, how do the communities themselves, from those different environmental standards which differ, how do they view the role of statistics? Do they seem to understand the importance of being counted? And then within the 60 days, you have actually spent so much. Maybe this should have something to do with this opinion. Did you manage to pay all your service providers within the 60 days, service providers that you might have used? Are you not owing them? Maybe this should have an impact in terms of what the audit opinion is saying about you. But, Chair, I think I'm quite happy at what Statistics South Africa is doing. I know how I wish other departments can actually share what is being done here, because they are not hired from anywhere. They also born and bred here. But the manner of approach, the attitude that they have towards their duty is very much promising, and it has been like that consistently. Keep it up, the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, taking the enormity of the task, it is acceptable that there will be problems and that we will not always achieve the financial reports that we would like to achieve in terms of quality and in terms of complying with all the regulations. But I have to somehow disagree with the SG that the system did not give in dramatically. The Auditor General's report is a devastating report. It doesn't spell good for the department. It shows some very serious deficiencies in terms of management. And If I can just give an example, there were 333 deviations, which amounted to an enormous amount of 71 million. And then 21 deviations above 1 million, worth 39 million. And then also the 16 million mainly from accidents in terms of the financial statements. I didn't go through all the details of the Auditor General's report, but certainly that doesn't even spell good. But let me just talk on the matters of non-compliance and the progress made in clearing and resolving the matters. An important issue is the procurement and contract management. Contracts could not be provided. And then, of course, there are some progress made in resolving these issues. But it does not spell good in terms of management. And then if I can just take you to the report of the Auditor General, the accruals, the department did not have adequate systems in place to maintain records of accounts payable for goods and services received but not yet paid for. And also the provision of the 50 days in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Those are issues that is well known in terms of general acceptable accounting practices, and I think we expected a better result in terms of that. The material losses to the amount of 34 million were reported by the department as a result of write-off of irrecoverable damages and losses to the government and hired vehicles. I know there's an internal investigation. I would like to ask whether we can't have an external investigation as to exactly what happened. It is not small amounts, and if we look at the amount allocated from Treasury in terms of the census, and it took us to, I think, 3.6 billion, is that correct? 3.4 billion from the fiscus. It is, we simply have to step up the organizational structure because this is an enormous amount, and we're expecting a result that we can take to the public in terms of credibility, and this certainly had a huge impact on the performance of Stats SA for the year. Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. Let me also welcome the report, but also congratulate the work that has been undertaken. Chairperson, I'm also worried around the financial performance of the department, specifically around, I think, two most important issues, if not three, the unresolved matter of advance payments of 7.8 million, and also the procurement of goods and services, of which is said to be under investigation. I would also probably move to say, Chairperson, probably we need some detailed reports as the committee so that we're able to enhance our oversight role as much as it might be internal investigation. But I think the issues of procurement, specifically for them to take us through in confidence to say this is their method of procurement and this is their policy and this is how they procure, the issues of the goods, what goods are they talking about specifically and which services are they referring to, so that we are able to also say that in our own oversight we are able to probably have some input around the issues and how it underwent. The issue of material losses also, you know, losing an amount of 34.4 million and they're written off as recoverable. I'm also not happy around that. So I really feel, Chairperson, that probably we need a detailed report outside even the processes, but internally, ourselves as an oversight committee, we are able to say really, really there are matters that they could not, they are out of their own control, as much as there might be AG's report around the issues of qualified report. But my question around all those things is that what is it that you think that could have been done better to avoid, and when did you realize that definitely the project, hence it was running, that we're running a project in part of the losses that have been accounted to, and what was the remedy to minimize it as much as this happened, but what was the remedy put in place to try to minimize rather than leaving it as is until to the latter, if that was the case. But I'm really worried around the financial management part of it, specifically on the smaller things. Let me get to the second part of my question around the issue of facilities management. I think it's on your report. It's page 21 on the annual report. On facilities management, I'm trying to grasp the paragraph on its own. What is it really it's reporting on? I'm just seeing a lot of things that are just being put there. One is what issues of quarterly compliance is trying to speak about, the issue of 38 audits at the head office, 110 provincial office, district, and it's also now speaks around challenges experienced, the issues of setting up the in-house travel management desk. But furthermore, I want to ask on the question where it says that the project was piloted from October to December. So I don't know which October to December. Was it last year, October to December? And the service agreements with three service providers are in the process of being finalized. When is the finalization are we talking about? And that's, yeah. The last one, Chairperson. On the issue of the human resource management, the data, you know, it's good when you say that 33% have been able to, the vacancy rate came down to that, and senior positions are women and so forth. It's, I think that is commendable. But it reports 120 field workers. I am interested, as much as it might be temporary work, I'm interested to find out of the 120 field workers, were you able on the 33% to consume others in terms of your employee? If not, can you just tell us that how many, is, does that mean there are 420 are on the street now, or are they back in their own locations and so forth? So I just want to find out, do you have that status as far as your data is concerned? Have you been in this training, in this experience, as that as is in its own capacity, were you able to absorb and just the field workers specifically, and are they used? Thanks.
You will decide how you delegate downwards or upwards.
Yeah.
Thanks. I want to just take the opportunity before the management team respond to make a few comments, particularly because the big story of this past year is conducting the census. The ISTE gave us a very good picture of the impact of the census, and the story of 96 was that everything ground to a halt in order to do the census. And in fact, 96 was very soon after 94, and we literally had a year to plan for 96. And you will remember, those with long memories, the SG was appointed to his position then as chief director, responsible for the census about 12 months before the census was run. So that's the first part of the story. 2001, the Stats Council in 2003 recommended that we don't do a census in 2006 in order to strengthen the organization, because the concern from 2001 was that if you do another census in 5 years' time, that you will destroy the entire infrastructure. And I think that what this report shows is that the organization has now grown and is strong and can withstand the impact of this imposition on it as the census is in a way. And the IST just very adequately demonstrated to you what that imposition is, that an organization of about 4,000 people grows over a very short period of time to over 150,000 people. We've got to visit every address in the country. We've got to get a form there. We've got to complete that form. Then we've got to get that form back. And then we've got to collect that data from the forms onto a computer and then start processing that. And on the 30th, when we release the results this year, we would then release the information from having processed all of that data, which is now sitting in the data processing center. I think some members may have seen the data processing center, several rugby fields worth of boxes with questionnaires sitting there. So that's the first part that is quite important to appreciate, that 2011 and the census in 2011 is a major milestone in having built the capacity of the organization. Just to respond to your question, Chair, in your opening remarks about, we're aware that the Minister of Finance will make the medium-term budget
strategy on the will make that speech on the 24th of October. Both the SG and the DG of National Treasury approach council because, as you're aware, in South Africa, we do not give the politicians pre-sight of the data in order to ensure that the data is not influenced by the politics of the day. So our council discussed this matter and has agreed to give the DG of National Treasury access to the data before we publish, on strict conditions that it will be protected with the usual confidentiality requirements. But just to say that the National Treasury will have access to the data before it is released. This is an exceptional decision that Council has taken because the rule is that there is no pre-sight before release. But in the Council felt that it would be unwise to strictly apply the rule in this case, because that would delay the data being fed into the budget processes for a whole year. And hence, Council has agreed that Treasury will get access to the data. We had a big discussion, and some colleagues were asking, are there general conditions under which we will release data? And Council has decided that under no circumstances will we release data, and each case will be dealt with on its own merits, like we have done in this case. So just to explain that is being done, and they able to do this. I just want to the council is concerned with the methodologies of how the data is produced, and there's an audit committee that oversees this, but one of the big concerns of council is obviously that we need to promote credibility in official statistics. And hence the audit opinion is an important part of this year. So that, and council has been extremely concerned that the progress we have been making over the years is rolled back in a way with the qualification on the audit. The qualification is primarily on the question of accruals. And my understanding of the accruals is, and I'm not an accountant, is that these are people at the end of the financial year, and it amounts to probably about 130 million rand that have not been paid but have delivered the service, and it will flow into the next financial year when they are paid, and that the system has been deficient. But I do want to point out that the amount in the context of 3.6 billion rand is significant, but also a relatively, in that context, a smaller amount. The other items that I refer to are matters of emphasis, and the SG has agreed, as is reported in this report, with the AG that those matters will be properly investigated, not internally by Stats SA, but by the national accountant. And I'm sure that those matters will ultimately come back to both the portfolio committee and also to, I assume, Scopa in the future. I'm raising this because in June 2005, I was appointed as the chair of council. And my very first meeting in parliament as the chair of the Stats Council was with Scopa and the qualifications we had as a result of the 2001 census. And quite frankly, we went to that meeting ducking the bricks that were being thrown at the SG and everybody on this side of the table. I'm more confident that the organization has matured, has grown up, and even though this is a disappointment to us that we have a qualified audit in this case, the organization has grown to the point where it can actually take this challenge on and recover quite quickly from it. The 2001 census resulted in multiple qualified audits, and I'm pretty confident that StatsSA has developed the systems to actually recover from this. The last point I want to make is the SG explains in his presentation that StatsSA's normal work continued excellently. But just to say that there are phenomenal work in other areas being done, and in a few weeks' time, you will see the release of the income and expenditure survey. What is this? This is a survey of some 30,000 households where record a two-weekly diary on all the expenditures in the household, all the income in the household. This is the survey that creates the foundation for creating a basket that will be used to measure CPI. The rebasing of CPI weights will then be based on the survey and so on. So when we say that all other work has been continued, these are phenomenal work, like the income and expenditure survey is like a survey that happens every 5 years that has continued alongside the work on the census. So that really I think what is important to appreciate is that the quality of that work has come through. At the same time, we have had the success of supporting our colleagues on the continent to run censuses in some countries where it's never been done. Sometimes with the colleagues in our offices giving support to countries like Sudan, we use the census as the basis for the settlement of a very difficult situation in that country and a foundation for which development can take place. So while I appreciate the tough comments that have been made about the qualification on the audit, and while the management will give like kind of, I do want to reassure the committee that in council, while we're not the audit committee, we're extremely concerned about this, and we are very confident that with what we have been explained by the SG and his team, that we will recover from this challenge in building the credibility of statistics in South Africa.
Thank you very much, Chair of the Portfolio Committee and Chair of Council. The colleagues around the table, particularly the Corporate Services DDG Henning and CFO Zimpiti, will deal with a number of questions that have come around the governance issues. But I think the preamble that the Chair of Council has put before us gives us the confidence that some of the things were rather difficult, not to say they were unavoidable, but they posed difficulties, and we see the outcome of those difficulties now. Coming to my gadget here has just disappointed me. I thought I was going to be sophisticated and use it. Oh, it ran out of battery. I was writing the questions here, but I'll try and remember what. It's coming back now. On the question of how the chair has already put the case that the data is produced for use, and it's very, very important to understand that it is for use by the state and not for the statisticians. And when it is a matter of public concern, it has to deliver on that public concern. And the fundamental principles make this clear around citizens' entitlement to public information. As it does that, it also makes it clear that there shouldn't be political interference in the method. And what is important about the council's intercession in this matter is that the numbers cannot be changed, the numbers cannot be manipulated for political ends at all. The numbers that will have been arrived at will be the numbers that will have been arrived at. And that is why the council is always there. So there is a matter of public concern and a matter of scientific practice. And that is governed by the fundamental principles of official statistics, which are 10 all in all. These are the conditions under which we have been discussing with the Treasury on this matter. The second issue around the losses, the damages, it's very sad. We did all we could to try and resolve that problem. There are two ways in which you do it. Well, in fact, there is only one way in which, there are two ways in which you do it. But in all the ways, there has to be co-ownership. If you ask me to go and run a census using my car, I'm less likely to drive it badly. I'll always drive it as my car. Now, there are preconditions to doing this. People who drive cars must be people who have some source of income so that they can put petrol and wait a few months before they claim their petrol back. Who are these people in society? Probably the teachers, because they are located nicely across the country, distributed well. We discussed this matter with education and said, can we have 20,000 teachers who will be supervisors and they must have the following credentials? We even piloted with teachers. And then up came the strike. And the risk was just too heavy for the census. The strike was during the pilot. And we said, it's not a crutch we'll lean on. Because what if there is a strike exactly at the same time and we are running a census and we've got teachers? That fell flat. We then tried the military and said, military, how about you giving us your cars? We understand that we have demobilized and we have people that can help us. That didn't move far as well. It was difficult to implement it. It was impossible. The conditions were not conducive. The third option is you rent cars that come with drivers. Now, that is a very expensive endeavor. Of course, we rented cars with drivers who were our employees, and they're all temporary. One company in 1996 came on board to ensure the vehicles that we had brought on board. And I think it went bankrupt. If the state were to say insure, I think without telling whoever is a prospective vendor the full story about how risky this business is, I think the state would have been dishonest. So we walked into this knowing that there are problems. We walked in this knowing that in 6,000 cars that we had, a number of them were going to be, it's going to be problematic. Even if we insure and call somebody to insure, we'll tell them the full story, and I don't think we would have mitigated, the state had to carry its own risk. What did we do? We branded the cars so that you could see it from a distance and know that that's a census car. We put transponders on the cars, and each time the car went outside its region, I would call and say, don't go outside your region. In fact, they called me one day when I was driving in the northwest. They said to me, what are you doing in Khabro in Botswana? I got so close to the border of Botswana that the operating room called and said, what are you doing in Khabro? I was in Dibono, in the northwest, visiting that place. It's so close to the border of Botswana. So these transponders and the response and talking to the people as they drove mitigated what could have been probably, I don't want to call it a bloodbath, but a very difficult thing to manage. So there were mitigations around damages, but you can go up to so far and not any further. If I were asked what I could do, and I had the rule under my hand, I would say the best always to run a census is to use teachers, because they have the infrastructure, they have everything, they are part of the system of government, they are distributed evenly. But with the kinds of matric results and the kinds of situations in the country, teachers may not be the most ideal. So what we can do is to use what we have, not what we desire to have. That's really the situation that we are having in the country in relation to operating a census. Now, what are the things that can improve the census in the future? I'm not sure whether October is the right month. It's too close to Christmas. It's too close to a period of exams. It's too close to, I think August is better. I think March is better. That's one thing that we should be able to do to improve. The second thing that we have to improve, which answers a lot of other questions, is we need to have addresses. 6 million dwellings in South Africa still don't have addresses. We need to know that when I send a letter and it is written 76, whatever the street will be in Bochum, my darling, we know that that letter will be delivered at that address. We should know if it is sent to this in Chonjobi, we know that it will arrive at that shared dwelling. When that doesn't happen, we have a very serious problem. And that's a big task. And it's a task that municipalities, state SA, and all other users have to come together and tackle fast. I was talking to someone who was in Turkey. At the beginning of the year, they said, well, we will have all these places addressed. By the end of the year, all those places are addressed. In South Africa, we have been talking about this from 98. And we have come with very clumsy strategies. I mean, in 96, we are painting the dwellings with numbers, as census, painting numbers there. Then water first comes, and somebody else comes, and somebody else comes. We have 5 numbers on the dwelling. That's not an address. It's not useful. And we have been doing that all the time. In the census of 2001 and this one, we said we are not going to paint anything on anybody's house until we have an agreement that can be driven. And this is the collaborative addressing program that we are talking about. But I think it requires oomph, it requires what is it, I don't want to say central control, but it requires a very clear, uncompromising drive to get these things there so that in the shortest space of time it's done. Otherwise, time undermines the sharpness of the activities. So we need that point, to get to that point and deal with. That will really improve the way we run the censuses. But not only improve the way we run the censuses, maybe the key to replacing a census by having continuous registrations, because the civil registration that I was talking about, the children can be registered against an address as they get born. Death can be registered against an address when they occur. And then at any given time, we can say what the population size of the country is. Movement is a geographic, depends on geography. When I move from here to another place, I must be able to say my address at my point of departure is this, my address at my destination is this. If you don't have an address, that movement cannot be accounted for. So the demand for censuses gets even greater. But once you have addresses, the census can run side by side with that. But in the long run, the census can be replaced with continuous. So there are those kinds of things that we really have to, and the technology at the moment enables us to do that. So we need to move with a lot of speed on that. The building, I'm sure, Honorable Madeleine, the DDG Henning will talk to us about that. Indeed, we need to think ahead, because things like the census, where you put aside 100 million rands for food, it is very clear and obvious empowerment fund. That thing, you don't even have to think twice about it. You don't have to give it to Kentucky or anybody. You got to say, please, you people around the school, around the village, we need to supply food to these children who are coming to count you, who are your children. Now, why should you externalize that? It has to be done there and belong there. And that's the ethnic citizenry that we are talking about. I don't think we succeeded that much in that area. It happened in a number of instances, but not to the extent that it would have been necessary and possible. So I don't think we stretched the limits to what needed to be stretched. So we ended up still using established institutions when clearly this was an opportunity for doing things differently and making people be own this process. So while it was done, but I don't think it was done to the extent that I would have loved it to be done. And in part, it's because of the constraints that our supply chain management interpretation, because I don't think we have stopped from doing it, but our interpretation constrained us from time to time. And of course, there were other things like, you want to do these things within governance, and also you are aware of the risks that are there. When you have so many staff members making decisions at different levels, then you have relatives of relatives of relatives. And we saw that coming out of the woods. In fact, when we payments delayed, then we'd be surprised by somebody calling you, saying, the payment does not... I say, but what interest do you have in this payment? Then you realize that, no, this has... So those streams you started seeing and saying, yes, this is what is coming out of the woods. Mm. So it had all that in it. The service providers within 60 days, I think the CFO will answer that. Even when we wanted to pay, the pipeline was not good enough. When you sit there and try to pay, you are not able to pay. So you sit there and watch the machine for 5 minutes, just not processing the payment. So that was there. The deviations, indeed there are many, and one has to say, yes, in good governance, you don't have to have so many deviations. But the only project of this nature, and the speed and all this,
and the
they do come, and they get approved by the statistician general. They are a symptom of problems, but they occur, they are used in a way that is allowed. So yes, they may be many, but they don't mean that there was no covenant. I authorized each one of the deviations as they came. But it is a symptom of a problem, and we will have to deal with that. The 7.8 million, this is a matter that I think is in the public domain, and it's a matter of urgency. GCIS buys bulk. And in buying bulk, we said, yes, they bought bulk, but it's a problem between ourselves and GCIS, and we are resolving it. It's a matter that is before the courts at the moment, and the state is saying no, it's not liable. But it's a matter of agency. How do you, through agency and the PFMA, execute agency? That is, GCIS is entitled to buy bulk for government. The statistician general has a PFMA that says all the money allocated to you, you will use prudently. How do you extend that PFMA rule into another department? And that's the problem about the 7.8 million. It happened at arm's length, and we still have a problem that we are trying to resolve between ourselves. The other matter of, that is under investigation was a matter that the accountant general said, well, let me see how clean your nose is. And we said, okay, accountant general, we'll show you how clean our nose is. We don't have a matter to suspect, but if you want us to go and investigate, we'll say, go and investigate. Okay. So there is no cause for us to doubt, but the accountant general says, well, I'm checking your nostril. So we said, let the accountant general go and check. The 157,000, we are an organization of 4,000. And with 157,000, even if you were to try 1% of that, is very difficult. But we continue to use 2,000 of them at the processing centers. Maybe 100 have managed to come to the organization. But there is a point that I want to make. We don't have a cadre of 157,000 people who have worked at least in 120 dwellings, not knowing what they will find when they get into that house. I think the most important training is the work they did house to house. It's a skill that no one can ever acquire. Being bold and going into a house, getting information, going the next day. Those 157,000 people have acquired through this process a skill that probably the collective of government has to look at and say, what do we do with these people? What are we going to do with them? Because it's not an ordinary skill. It is not the training that we gave to them that this is the questionnaire, this is where you tick. No. It is the ability to knock at the door, have the confidence to go in there, have the confidence to persuade, and have the confidence to get out with an answer. It is that which I think we have to tap into and see. Second thing that is important, not the 157,000, is the infrastructure that is where you were. When you go there, you will find a ghost town. And that infrastructure is so powerful. And I'm discussing with other departments and see how do we make use of this infrastructure. The information technology infrastructure and the way it really manages information, image, extraction from image to this, to that. That's what we have to look at. I will ask the DDG, Henning, and CFO to discuss the other issues that have been raised. Chair.
Good morning. Thank you, SG. Honourable members, I really welcome these questions. I think it's good food for thought for us as well. Allow me to start off by looking at the better models for paying field workers. We are currently looking at systems. We've had our census debriefing. We are currently looking at ways to do 2016, perhaps, either in another 5 years or in another 10, depending on what comes out after the 30th of October. We are looking at systems and processes of improving the methods, not just of the payment of field workers, but also talking to the vehicle accident and damages, because this is our two biggest collateral damages if you have to look at the impact in terms of human beings. and the livelihood that focuses on them. In terms of the building, there has been a huge momentum in it. We have actually gone out into the second phase of getting the Treasury approval required in terms of the PPP regulations. We have also got the three successful service providers. We actually put out a newspaper advertisement to thank the three successful bidders about 2 months ago. It was in the three major newspapers, and also thanking DPW for our land parcels that they've confirmed for us at Silver Corp. With the projected timeframes, and if all goes well, with in terms of the bids that are supposed to come in January 2013, we will be starting our evaluation the end of January, so start the 1st of Feb. And we have even looked at mechanisms with National Treasury to decrease the negotiation periods within the PPP that we're currently running. Hopefully, if God wills, by October 2015, we should be moving into our new building. One of the major concerns that I had was my dress rehearsal should I have census 2016. However, we've been able to manage the relocation plan and build in the relocation plan that it is around the dress rehearsal rather than around census 2016. So we're looking at October 2016 as the move. Again, I'm saying if God wills. Okay. In terms of the expansion that you asked, you know, has this expansion contributed towards the qualification? The answer is no. The qualification is around the payment of service providers who had delivered goods to us. We've received it. Okay, so it was a service that was duly rendered to us, but we have not paid them at the 31st of March 2012. The expansion did give us some problems in terms of decentralization, but the monitoring mechanisms, because there was an M&E team that was also put along from the population and social statistics side, which also helped us with moving that 1.2 million tons and making sure wherever we've got gaps we can fill in. So I think there was a very good collaboration between the corporate services functions and making sure all the logistics get done, but also tying into the core work stream of delivering those questionnaires, for example, to the various provinces and the district offices that we put in place. I welcome the training of the micro, if I can call them, the SMMEs, and making sure that we train these entrepreneurs for the future. Yeah. I think it's important because that's the only way we are going to develop society and make sure that we can get service providers in all spheres, because the business that we run is different to any other department. Mm-hmm. We've had some discussions last night, and we spoke about the IEC, but the rules and regulations that bound the IEC is different to that we work with in StatCSA. They have the option not to follow certain regulations, etc. We are bound by the SCM regulations, but we also look and work with Treasury to see how do we do things differently, because the rules and the regulations has also got some space around it where you can maneuver and allow these smaller entrepreneurs to come on board. Because in all honesty, that's where we want to see the development,
yes,
of those people in those communities and making a livelihood. It may not be sustainable to take them through to the next 10 years, but at least we know we've made an impact for that period in their lives. Yeah. And I think that's one of the key important factors of making sure not just getting the undercount right and the population, but showing that we've left a mark. We made a difference in somebody's household, at least even if it's just for a month. They could put extra food on the table. That, I think, is what's important for us. In terms of the 60 days, I'm going to also make the comment. The 60-day payments is not our 30-day payment in terms of the PFMA regulations that we didn't meet around the qualification. It was, again, as I explained, around the fact that we could not fully account and be able to put the number in our financial statements that was precise in terms of the goods that we had received but not paid for yet. That is the doubt that was created for the Auditor General. The 333 deviations, I think the SG actually explained it very well. The deviations were done within the regulations, okay, in terms of 16A4A of the Treasury regs and the Supply Chain Management Guidelines. We are allowed to deviate in three circumstances, where there's sole service providers, where we have urgent and emergency. Now, emergency is just life or death. Our deviations were around the first two factors, where we had sole or single source service providers and where we had urgent procurement measures. you would notice if you look at that disclosure note that there was a significant increase, and it is relative to the activity that we undertook for the census. And even if I had to list the deviations for you, would see it's all around those things where we as management had to act and respond to certain things that needed to be done to make sure that we get the good services out to the provinces, out in terms of our activities. But it was done within the regulations. Anything that was not done within the regulations would have been disclosed, where we talk about condoning certain irregular expenditure. And those are separate lists, and those are minor compared to the 300. Although I take your point, it is not minuscule. It still has an impact. For me, even 700,000 is the taxpayers' money that we're spending. So I take the note on that. Just in terms of the 30-day payments, again, I just have to say the accruals, I think I've explained. In terms of the 30-day payments, it is a system issue. We've had put processes in place. We are one of the few departments that have an invoice tracking system where service providers clearly understand where and whom they have to send invoices to. We look after that part very carefully. And you would notice in the last couple of years, we didn't have, if you look at the last 3, 4, 5 years of annual reports, we didn't have those issues. However, when you double, now, just about more than double your invoices that come through into a system called the basic accounting system, CETA systems start falling over. The amount of invoices I processed, I think, was close to 59,000 invoices for a very short period of time with almost the same amount of staff members. And even if you look at that, the efforts that was put in allowed the Auditor General not to raise it as a matter of emphasis, but also just highlighted in the audit report. I think if it was that devastational, they also would have raised it as an emphasis to bring to your attention this is a serious concern or a grave concern of theirs. We are, however, going back into business almost as usual, because as my staff knows, I said to them it's business unusual because the same audit report will not recur next year. We cannot afford it. I think we've, for the last 6 years, maintained a good reputation, and I think it's only good that we go back to that. Census was an abnormal year. In terms of the vehicle accident and damages, we need to understand that we are taking kids, matriculants, some employed, well, mostly unemployed, and we're saying to them, here's a vehicle and go and collect my data. I hear you about the external investigation. However, it is bumper bashings. It is, I mean, if you look at the grave incidences that we had in 2001 compared to what we had now, it is not minuscule, but it is relatively smaller than what we had before. In 2001, the over expenditure that we had, a major portion of it was around vehicle accident and damages, and it was almost double the amount of what we have now. The systems and processes in terms of the tracking that this SG spoke about were in place. It assisted us to an extreme measure because we would have ended up with much more, because the number of vehicles that we hired now was almost 34% more, 34 to 40% more than what we had in 2001. And if you just had to extrapolate it in terms of the damages, then we would have sat at about 200 odd million of damages. So we've tried, and again, during the debriefing session, looking at different ways and different mechanisms, and SG has described some of them. The only thing that the external investigation would reveal is that, yes, Actiri did bash the bumper of this hired vehicle. So we also need to look at the cost-benefit analysis around that. The team that is investigating, although they're internal, they're also separate from, and so we've placed the segregation of duty to look at the incidences. Now, the reason why it would be irrecoverable, because for me to find Joe Soap now, who was in the census, who is unemployed, and say to him, you need to pay me 3,800 rand for a bumper, is going to be impossible. The cost of recovery of that money is going to be to outweigh the actual debt that we're trying to recover, which we are not going to recover at all. So we're taking into account the cost-benefit analysis around that as well, and therefore you will see it under the irrecoverable amount. The matters around the matters of emphasis, the KTS, and the, well, I've mentioned the name now, but yes, and the unresolved 7.8 with GCIS, we will report when we come back on those matters. We do not have the final outcomes, but it is with the Office of the Accountant General. both matters are being investigated by them. I think I've explained the material losses as well, covered in that question there. And I also explained about the remedies. In terms of the facilities management on page 21, it is the synopsis of the other activities, because facilities management looks after the building, but they've also got a regulatory role that they have to play in terms of the security legislations in South Africa. So they had to do the security compliance and that, including all the labor-related matters, the OHS matters that they have to comply with. And this paragraph was specifically written around the extra infrastructure that we had built, okay? So the crux of that, perhaps, if you want, we can provide that to you in the coming months. But any issues that would have arisen out of the Auditor General would also have reported both in the audit report, but also in the management comment letters, because of being compliant, if any major issues came out, they would have had to have a report in regulatory and other matters in the audit report. In terms of the system, the October was October 2011, so it was in that financial year, so we reported on that. The system has been finalized. It was finalized just after the 31 March period, but this report being up to the 31 March, we could not add it in terms of that. The system was finalized, or the procurement of the system was finalized around April, and between April and May were the final contract signatures that needed to happen. I think the SG spoke around the absorption in terms of the 120,000 field workers, and I think he's given a good platform of where we need to go to, what we have done. We've created a skill that nobody else can provide. And just in terms of some of the feedback, we do absorb some of those interns because we are, some of those field workers because we keep them on the database into our other surveys that we have. So it is not permanent employment, but it's periodic employment. Unfortunately, the fiscus also won't allow us to at least absorb 1 or 2% of that, seeing that they're also looking to cut our current budgets over the next 3 financial years. But we will always aim to try and keep some of them in and to keep the skill building going, because it is an ongoing process that we have. Okay. Then if there's anything that the CFO still needs to add?
Kalewa, there's not much to add except to bring to the honourable members' attention the fact that We didn't have sufficient funding to undertake the census following the conventional method. We got confirmation from National Treasury in August of an additional 486 million. And in that way, our systems had to be agile to support the first listing, which was done separately, because if we hadn't received the additional 200 million from National Treasury, we wouldn't have had to undertake, we wouldn't have been able to have a separate listing process. And that is one of the reasons you would have seen some of the deviations. But as DDG Corporate Services has already said, all of them were within the legal framework as prescribed by the supply chain management framework.
I'm not sure whether any
further comment from the team from StatsSA, if there are any gaps that we have not covered, the team can hop in.
And you?
I think the
questions that have been asked have really been well covered. I would say that before you open for the second round, that we really appreciate the support that we are getting from the committee, including the understanding that they have towards what is the governance matter, which is the audit finding. They are echoing in similar ways the thinking and the understanding and what the audit committee also expressed
that the audit committee found the opinion rather harsh. I think what that says, it doesn't say there is no qualification. There is a qualification. But the circumstances around it are explained. They are not, the circumstances are not endemic. It is a situation that has occurred at the time when there was a pressure around the census and the organization has the capability to recover from that situation. I think that's what the essence of the discussion is about. It's not about saying there's no qualification. There is a qualification. It's not about seeking understanding in terms of saying it's a small matter. It is a matter. But certainly going forward, this matter is under control and can be resolved.
Just looking from the signs or the body language of honorable members, I don't think there's any follow-up questions from where I'm sitting. Not to say I'm suppressing anybody. But just to make a few comments, I think the slide... I'm sure it's 7, under challenges and constraints. In fact, it's not that one. Sorry. I'll tell you just now. There's a point where you are basically indicating that whilst the ZSA in a year of census, you still have to remain focused on the core business. And I think as we look at the issue of the Auditor General's report, and the challenges, therefore, or thereof, we should be able to say or to discern. And I don't think, you know, my earlier comment to say how ZSA is perceived. It is perceived as an organization that is seasonal or periodical. It comes into existence when you wear your yellow suit. And after the result, it goes into a period. It's like many people, if to ask them about the role of the IEC, it's an organization that conducts elections. What keeps them in between, perhaps, is by-elections, when it is not like that. The articulation of your core mandate is very, very important, but it's not for you. Is for those who are policy makers and decision makers who should constantly indicate. I mean, the CPIs and so on and so forth, labor for survey and all those kind of things. It's important for the general public and those who use the information to be aware that in between census, this is a very important organization that continues to inform policy makers in the country. Having said so, I think for us to adequately understand the concerns raised by the Auditor General, we should be able to compare the last census, the Auditor General's report of the last census, and this one, so that we can see the issues picked up at that time, whether there's an improvement or no improvement, so that we're able to make an informed or to come to an informed conclusion as a committee around that, so that we don't rush. We had a meeting with the Auditor General's office yesterday, not as a committee, but chairpersons of committees here. We came to make a presentation to Parliament about the challenges
root causes of qualified reports and the challenges thereof, but also who is supposed to be an assurer to the public in terms of the public purse. There's a whole range of a series of institutions in between. It will be managers, it will be the executive authority. When it comes to independent assurers, Parliament is one of them, and the independent auditors. Now the question is, where do we get these cracks that makes things to fall in between? Now, and the picture that one is actually seeing is beginning to worry us. And this is the context within which your report will also be looked at. That in the last 18 years of democracy, there was a period where there was an improvement in terms of auditing on or how public purse is being utilized and accountability thereof. In the past two financial years, you don't see an improvement. You see a decline or stagnation. Now, that is a worrying sign. And I thought I should just make this observation so that as we talk about the challenges that we have, especially in a year that we've got a national event, what are the systems that we need to put in place? Of course, one takes into consideration that this time around you conducted this very, very important exercise within a period of 12 months, not from the beginning to the conclusion of results. 12 months, not 24 months. That indicates there's an improvement. But also, I think we should then begin to look into systems that must begin to respond to these challenges, including engaging with the Auditor General so that you don't have a report that in the public domain says all is not well. You just need a little blot, you know, on the screen that attracts unnecessary attention to yourself. So from where I'm sitting, I think it will be important that the committee at some point may need just to spend some time. I know it is now a matter of the scope, but it doesn't mean the committee does not have the right to look into this report so that we can engage with yourselves and see how best to actually assist so that we don't become praise singers, much as you do a good work. But I don't think we'll be doing justice to you if we just say, no, we understand. We understand, and therefore you are, it's condonable. I think it is important that we ourselves come up with a mechanism and suggestions on how best can we improve moving forward on these key issues. I think I agree with the chair that data is produced for the use by the state. And I think we've done very well as a country where no political interference could be found trying to influence the methodology or the methods of how to arrive. And indeed, I understand fully the interaction. I mean, we do have institutions that are supposed to be independent from one another, not influence each other. Treasury and the Reserve Bank, that's on economic issues. But that doesn't mean that you've got firm walls that the institution cannot even speak to each other and one another in the interest of the nation. So I think one fully understands the decision that you've taken in terms of the medium-term budget policy statement in that regard. You know, in terms of public purse, there's nothing that can be regarded as minuscule. There's no such a thing. Of course, when you look at 3.6 billion or 1.6 billion that you have to process within 60 days, if there's 1.2 million or 200,000 that cannot be accounted for properly, it raises concern. But also, we do not want to actually give a blanket check for perverse incentives.
because it is this kind of challenges that in the process some individuals find it necessary to exploit that for personal benefit. You find it very difficult. By the time you try to attend to this thing, it will be cancerous. It has eaten half of the body. So I think it will be important that we find a way to deal with that. So in conclusion from my side, Chairperson of the Council and the SG, did I say the SG? Yeah.
Yes.
All right. You see, there's somebody by the name of Samson, and his middle name is Gwede. So, and his title in an organization where he works is SG. So both the
initials
and the title for his job corresponds, SG. I think as a committee what we would need to do on this issue. The annual report is very, very important for us to have been taken through, but we still need to look into the issue of Auditor General, you know, separately. Where the need arises, we'll then interact with yourself to make sure that we are able to assist you in moving forward. We're looking forward for the results. As you have indicated, that in the next few days they will come out, and indeed we think you have done a good job, even in advance before we know what is contained in the result itself. The issue of enumerators, I think, was spoken about it many a times, as to what do you do with this core that we have trained, you know. It's an experience that must not disappear into thin air. And it means inter-collaborative efforts between yourselves and other institutions and so on and so forth. I'm just thinking that when the IEC conducts elections, it also goes into recruitment mode. What do you call these people that goes out there to monitors and all that? I think there should be an overlap or a permutation, you know, because this is a skill, it's almost what you need in the other side. To the extent to which you interact and see what kind of people do you use, because it's almost out there in the country, it's not confined to one place. I think I'll pause here and say we really welcome the report as it is, but I think on our side as the committee, we still have got our own work to do, so that we come back and sit down. If we can find that time, we'll have to find space to deal with these issues seriously. So, I think that's what I can say to you, SG and Chairperson of Council and your team. We don't have to belabor this point to show that we are on duty and stay until 1 o'clock. It was scheduled to finish at about 1, but if we're efficient enough, like your organization is, I'm sure you help us also to become more efficient in Parliament in doing our work. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members. Through the ministry, I'm sure that the committee that has guided us in the task, in particular the one on the census, will receive due invitation for the launch of the results. As well as I think there could be an opportunity to provide a briefing on the results either before or after, but there will be a special session, I think, where we have to really talk through the results. We'll be talking to the minister about that. The venue might be Pretoria,
Well, Cape Town, it looks like we are leaning very much to Cape Town because that's where the president will be and the ministers will be, so we may have to come to Cape Town. We have thought that staff at head office and representations from the regional offices will be in their numbers at the venue in Pretoria. That was our preferred venue, but it means that very few of us will be able to come to Cape Town, but I think they will make do with the regional office here as well. But the invitation will definitely come, as well as what will embrace the program before and after, so that the committee is well apprised and briefed on what it guided us to do.
Can I just say something about the event itself? I think more often we carry out very important exercises as a country. And the foot soldiers, the people who really do the work, at the end of the day, they don't even associate with the final product. And I think it does contribute in this perception that we've got an elitist approach on a number of national issues. You know, you said census in a war situation is the biggest mobilizing tool. Now, the 157,000 workers or people that you had in carrying out and executing this task, one way or the other, wherever they are, they should find themselves being part of the final product. I don't know how you do it, whether as we do it here in Cape Town, you also have people. I know there's an issue of cost there, but those people that we found in the operational center, hard at work, working shifts, I think one or the other. It's a way of keeping them together. It's a way of beginning to say you are a pool for us to move on into the future, not just do it as and when and call them as and when you need them. So I think you can find a way and a mechanism to make sure that they are part of the national event. It's a culmination of their work, what we are going to be celebrating as a country. So let's not discuss them completely because we happen to be in Cape Town. I'm not saying fly them here. You can't afford that. But you can find a way to make them to be part of the process and the celebration of the final product. It is their product. They must own it up. I think I've made my point. You know, there was a time where the IMF said economics is a matter for economics. In some of the developed countries then. And they said, should we take a loan from the IMF? And that country decided to say, let's have a referendum and hear ordinary people, what is their view around the IMF? When people thought, ordinary people don't understand. When they reach street vendors, people on the pavement selling this and that, their knowledge of what the debt will do to their country was amazing. And they fed into the final product of what the country should do. So let's not find ourselves trapped in the belief that those who carried out this work, they are not interested in knowing the product that they produce themselves. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
But I have to now stop the sound.